Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Evolution of a Snake. I am Miss Americana, and this is the Heartbreak Prince.
I love it.
Lover came out. I don't think we're prepared to talk about it, but release week hit us pretty hard.
Release week and a half is still hitting me pretty hard.
We weren't even in attendance for any release week events, and we still have been reeling from what's been going on. I thought that this year, 2011 Part 2, was actually really important. So I was looking through it last night, the notes that we have, and I was like, well, it seems like not a lot is happening, but it was actually like a very personal year of evolution, shedding of a skin.
Reading the diary entry that she wrote, one of them that she wrote kind of pre-read, I feel like every single song that I write for this album is like the best yet, and blah blah blah. Or
Well,
but
she was right.
yeah, so it's like this. To me, whenever I think about it, so like when I've been trying to do the rankings of the albums, including Lover, I can only do it from Red forward because including Fearless and Speak Now, it's like they even Speak Now to me at this point is so I don't know. Like it's just I can't listen to it the same way that I used to because it's just like younger. Not that it's immature, I just mean that it's younger.
It just
And I
doesn't
think
feel like the Taylor we have come to
Right,
know now.
exactly. And I think Red really was kind of like the start of her like true like adulthood maturity. When she was writing the album 2011, it's just like this like huge like everything's changing all of a sudden. Even though she kind of seemed the same back then, in hindsight, it's just like completely different from Speak Now to Red. It's so fucking different.
There's one major change at the end of the year, which we'll get into, obviously, but that was the catalyst for us at least realizing that she was going through some sort of major transformation. And I think that this was the year she decided, because the Speak Now tour was so successful, I think she decided this year she was like, oh, I'm going to be a pop star. I'm going to work with Max Martin. I'm going to get those bops and I'm going to deliver it to those hungry, undeserving rats.
Yep. Yep,
So
exactly.
we start 2011 Part 2 with photo blogs throughout the era on her website. And I really like these pictures. You know, the black and white ones of her on the beach with
Those
Caitlin and
are
other
the
agency
first ones
members.
that I always think of whenever I think of the photo blogs. Those pictures are
I
iconique.
love them. And this is also the funny thing about this year is that it's really like the precursor to her obsession with the Kennedys, which I think is really funny because she kind of starts dressing like one. She's getting to that
I
highness
hated
port.
that shift.
I love that Taylor has these weird hyper fixations. Like, I can really relate. I just get very obsessed with things for short periods of time. Never one as dramatic as going as far to try and infiltrate a family, but
I mean, if
you
you had
know,
the opportunity, you would do
for
it.
sure, 100%. I mean, if I could become Taylor Swift adjacent and get into her life, I would. And she's kind of taking a break from men at this stage, but there are like two or three kind of sparks that happen this year, and one of them is with Garrett Hedlund, and
Oh
Gwyneth
shit.
Paltrow introduces Taylor to him, and they go out for dinner together. I had forgotten that completely.
This was a big deal. I had forgotten that too, but I remember this being a big deal because I think that was during the time when, so this was when the Hunger Games was starting to get filmed. This is so random. But so there were a lot of fan casts for Finnick O'Dare and Garrett
Oh, is he one
Hedlund.
of them?
Garrett Hedlund was going to be Finnick O'Dare, and I was so fucking into it. I was like, he's so fucking hot. He looks just like him. And then the rumors about Taylor and him going out, I was just like, this is fucking meant to be. Yeah,
This
this
shit
is
is in
in
different
different
areas.
fucking areas. Yeah, so that's kind of the only thing that I remember about the Garrett and Taylor thing, was that I was fucking into it.
It didn't last very long. I really genuinely think it was just one date. And like to us, we're always like, oh, this relationship, this song is about this person, like obscure relationships. But I really feel like, you know, she was in her early 20s. Like she was just, you know,
Yep,
going out
dating.
on dates. She
Yep.
probably went on one date with him and was like, wow, he's gorgeous, but he's super boring. And I would guess that he is.
Yep, I would think that he is.
And she's in and out of New York for the summer. And this is when she really starts to get papped a lot. Because I feel like before the paps were following her on a case-by-case basis. I would say that her old publicist, Paula, definitely put in a few calls to get her papped. But now she's kind of like at that level of success. So there are a lot of candids of her walking down the street. And it is weird to see because she doesn't have any security with her. it's just her and like maybe Caitlin or one of her friends or like one security guard, but now you see her and it's like everybody's staying 15 feet away and there's like 8 security guards. If we see her, we barely ever do. But if we do, it's just interesting to see the difference. So throughout the summer, she's still doing the tour. And on June 12th, she does the CMA Fest. I loved this performance because we hadn't yet gotten the Speak Now Tour DVD. So I really liked seeing the gold dress and a nicely filmed presentation. And she did Sparks Fly, The Story of Us, Our Song, Mean, Fearless, You Belong With Me, and Love Story. She completely forgets that Mine was the first single off of the album, apparently.
I really like that performance too, actually. Now that we're bringing it up, Sparks Fly on CMA Fest that year was iconic.
Wow, that was a moment. It
sticks with me. Yep, it was a fucking moment.
And it was shot really well, and I like all the candids of her like going through the crowd. And then June 25th and 26th, she plays the iconic, much discussed, and overhyped Rain shows at Gillette Stadium. And if everyone that attended those shows could just do me a favor and shut the fuck up, that would be really, really good.
I have a particular aversion to bragging about that fucking show because that was the show that I was supposed to go to.
Ooh, I forgot that.
Yeah, yes. It's still to this day, it really was back then, but now it still makes me really fucking mad. They're like, I was at the Gillette Stadium rain show. It's like, well, congratulations. You know how many rain shows there have been since that one?
That's what I'm saying. There's been many. I mean, MetLife had a few this year.
So the thing is that, like, about the rain show is that I don't know how jealous I am of the fact that you stood there in the pouring rain and couldn't take any videos because your phone would have been destroyed. Like, you know,
yeah,
like,
let me tell you, I went to a rain show and it's not fun. I was cold, I was wet, I was unhappy, I couldn't sit down in my chair during New Year's Day. It was really bad.
You being in the rain is not the fun part.
No, it's just her. Too.
And I can watch that from my couch.
Exactly. I will say that the videos of her doing Long Live from Gillette, I will say a little bit iconic. I don't want to give them anything, but that was a little bit iconic.
The one that I always think of is the finale, the encore, when she's wearing the big dress.
Oh, yeah, on the balcony.
Like, she, like, picks it up and she, like, runs through the rain. I think about that a lot. That's actually, it's cute.
We're like, okay, everybody shut up. But it was kind of iconic. Just a little bit. But we don't want to hear about it anymore. And then on July 18th, Taylor finally feeds us and releases Sparks Fly as a single. It is received positively by music critics. I believe that this didn't crack the top 10, which shocks me because it's one of the better single choices from Speak Now, I guess.
She released it as a tour video, which screwed it from the start. Like, it was screwed from the beginning because it was the tour video. But it still could have performed well. But the second thing is that she didn't promo it. She pretty much just, like, vomited out this tour video and was like, here, there you go! Like, it was never performed at an award show that I'm aware of. Like, she didn't, you know, like, put it out there. Like, here's my song, Sparks Fly. It was just kind of like, it was like New Romantics or every song that's given the tour video. It's just kind of like forgotten about.
Well, and that really disappoints me because Sparks Fly is such a cinematic song. I say this about a lot of Taylor songs, but that one really is like pure drama. Like if she had done just a gold, the Cavalli gold dress, if she had just worn that and gone on stage at like the AMAs or something, it would have been iconic.
I always like to think about what the video would have been like too if it hadn't been a tour video. And it's like the possibilities are endless.
I know, the looks that could have been served.
So fucking good.
10 days later, it is the Speak Now tour stop in Grand Rapids. You may be asking, why is that significant? You know who's from Grand Rapids? Taylor Lautner. She changes the lyrics in Back to December from If Chain Is On Your Door, I Understand, to This Is For The Boy From Michigan. And it was like, Taylor, this one, you gotta let it go already. You have to move on.
I feel like at that point, like, it had been too long for her to still kind of addressing the issue. She could have just sat there and ate her food and sang the fucking song.
Could have.
She didn't.
And looked sad, but she had to, like, you know, give us a little bit of drama, which is what I love about her, but it's a little excessive.
I kind of miss when she used to, like, do shit like that. Like, you know, like, she wouldn't say anything specifically to us, but she would, like, feed us the drama somehow, some way, by, like, you know, vaguely or ambiguously give us the drama. It was, like, an arm lyric, or, like, we would know something that was going on in her life just because we stalk her life all the time. Mm. And now you can't do shit like that. I have no the fuck idea what's going on with her at any given time.
And I also hate...
No fucking clue.
She used to do Easter eggs so much before she actually called them Easter eggs, and they were way better back then because they felt like authentic, genuine moments where she was trying to communicate something to us rather than being like, these dice on my shorts, like, suggested a line from Cruel Summer. It's like, okay, that's not interesting to me, and I would never be able to figure it out except in hindsight. Not fun when you have to wait months to decipher them. Right, exactly. It just shows that she has a weird analytical brain.
It's fun if, like, in the video, she was like, okay, so the album title is in the video. You know, whatever the fuck, find it. And then somebody found it, and she was like, yep, that's it. And then she had the whole announcement. But, like, that's not how she did it. It was just like, oh, find the album title. Nobody's found it. Okay, bye. And then vanished.
And we had everybody had found it.
I had to listen to people talking about kaleidoscope this and kaleidoscope that and this, that, for months because everybody was trying so hard to find something. The Easter egg thing, I could go on and on and fucking on.
It is so stupid. But yeah. The point we're trying to make is that when they were authentic and felt like they were links to her actual life rather than her music or her career, they were interesting because it gave us like a little glimpse into her life beyond just being a pop star.
Exactly. Actually, you know what's a really good one, a really good Easter egg that just like popped into my head is in Last Kiss, when she's talking about July 9th, that is an Easter egg.
Yes.
It's like, figure out who this song is about,
of
July
epic
9th,
proportion.
And we did. That is an Easter egg. Whatever the fuck was going on with the Lover era, the pre-Lover
era,
torturous.
Was
not Easter eggs.
That was just hurtful to me.
It was demonic bullshit.
It was evil. So I thought this was funny. I was going through the past photos of the summer because she was out and about a lot this summer despite being on tour. But she was papped in Nashville carrying the free gift Wonderstruck bag before Wonderstruck was announced, like months
God, and
before.
You know, when the Wonderstruck purse came out, and it came out as a fucking free gift, I lost my fucking mind when I remembered that she actually used the purse. I used that purse to death.
I mean, it's cute. I will say, it's cute. I think it's
obsessed
nice.
Obsessed over it. Yeah, it was, I like patchy kind of stuff, you know, like patchwork. Mm-hmm. So I was really fucking into it. I don't know what happened to it. I lost it somewhere between high school and college. It just like between dorm room to dorm room just vanished. But I miss it.
August 7th, Taylor attends the Teen Choice Awards in a white Marilyn Monroe dress kind of thing. She's starting to put her hair up a lot. So she's doing like a high pony with bangs-ish. And she sits looking friendly with Justin Bieber. I think this is really funny. I think it's hilarious because they clearly fucking hate each other now. And she dances with Selena Gomez to One Direction. And I think it's so funny to watch videos of that because she's like trying so hard to look like she's not completely obsessed with Harry Styles.
I was wondering why that night kind of sticks out in my mind. And, you know, the outfit is like, I can see it in my brain when I close my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why. It's because so much shit happened that night that was like a precursor.
Yeah, there was so much
other things.
Again, with
come.
The Easter eggs. Easter eggs, unintentional Easter eggs are the best ones. She also poses for a picture with Taylor Lautner, who she just can't seem to let go.
I wish they were still friends today.
Me, really, you know what? Me too. I would love to see a picture of them in this day and age. So then on August 18th, Rolling Stone interviews Taylor about the Speak Now tour. And she starts to talk about the Tea Party, which begins the official Taylor narrative on what exactly the Tea Party is, how you get picked for it, and why she does it. So she says that she has this thing called the Tea Party, and during the show, I have people scour the audience for the craziest people out there, the ones that paint their faces or cover themselves in balloons or dress up like a banana or wrap themselves in Christmas lights or dress up as my alter ego, T-Swizzle. Sometimes I'll say, row 14, six seats in, go get that 7-year-old girl who knows all the lyrics to Dear John. I have some things to say about this. So first of all, this is like the purest form of fan selection. This is how it all began, right? Like there's no Taylor Nation bullshit. There's no like trying to get their attention on the internet. It's just you go to the show and if you're having a really good time and if you dress up, you get picked and you meet her. No rule, nothing. I will say that I don't believe for a second in my life that Taylor ever saw someone and said, row 14, six seats in, go and get that 7-year-old girl who knows the words to Dear John. Why does a 7-year-old girl know the words to Dear John?
If you're fucking gonna tell me that Taylor, you know, on stage, glare of the lights in her eyes, singing her heart out, Dear John, going off. And she looks out at the audience and somehow, some way,
she knows.
And it's like 50 feet back, sees a tiny 7-year-old girl.
And she can see her singing along. All the words on the floor. And like, I just don't think so.
No. The only people that she can like genuinely see and see what they're doing
front row
are like the people who are like, you know, that maybe like 5 to 10 feet back, she can see them if she's looking. But I don't think she looks that hard.
No, she doesn't. You know what I mean? I've been in the front row a few times, and I can tell you that she doesn't really examine closely everybody in the front row. Like, she's performing. She has other things to focus on. She's not, like, sitting there trying to see who's a big fan to meet. I don't think she has ever looked at someone in the crowd while on stage and been like, go and get that person. Because how would she divide her attention like that? In this interview, she also says she was asked about what books she had read recently. And her answer is, I just read a 900-page book called The Kennedy Women, which goes back to the first Kennedy woman coming from Ireland in the 1800s. Fuck. She planted the seed and it harvested.
Fucking psycho.
She's crazy. I love her. She's so weird. And this was like a public thing as well. Like, she talked about the Kennedys for like a good while before she got with ye olde Connor Kennedy. And do I think she was really into him? I mean... Or do I think she was just into the fact that he was a Kennedy?
That had to have been the entire attraction. Not that he was ugly, but I mean, perp taste in men is iffy to begin with. But he also was like a kid. It was weird. There's no way he was mature. I mean, come on.
So after this interview on August 28th, I think she does a show in LA. I think that's where it was. Who's in the crowd but Taylor Lautner? And she hugs him and she walks through and she has Nicki Minaj arm lyrics that night.
What were
she
they?
She had some lyrics from Moment for Life. So I think she was, you know, being extra emo, because you know who else went to 2 shows of this same run? Joe Jonas. Yeah, so Joe Jonas also attends 2 of these shows. And I just wanted to point out some nice arm lyrics that I found. I didn't want to do all of them because they're not really interesting. But some of them are, you know, a little indicative of what she's going through on tour. So one is, for one desperate moment, he crept back into her memory. It took a while to understand the beauty of just letting go. I guess we're all one phone call from our knees. That's my favorite. And then this one was very her. I slept in castles and fell in love because I was taught to dream. That's very Speak Now Tour-esque.
Yes.
And then she has, I dream of things that never were and ask why not. You know who said that? JFK.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, my God.
She's obsessed.
This is the Easter egg era, if I've ever seen it before. What the fuck is wrong with her?
She is so weird.
Did she think that we weren't going to notice? Like, why was she doing these things?
This is why she doesn't give us Easter eggs anymore, because we drag her when we put it all together.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ.
And on one of the nights that Joe Jonas is in the crowd, she writes, after all that we've been through, I know we're cool. Love that song.
I actually remember that. I remember that one in specific, and everybody kind of like lost their shit over it, because I guess that was the beginning of them kind of like starting to talk again. And it's funny to me, because out of everyone, Jake Gyllenhaal excluded, out of everyone, Joe Jonas, I don't know, they just had like the weirdest progression. It's like, I
know, and they're like friends now. He went to 3 shows on the Speak Now tour. That's weird for me, because it's not exactly like they were on, I mean, maybe they were on speaking terms, but 3 shows, that's a little, you know, it's a little obsessive.
A little excessive. And sometimes I wonder if, like, maybe at some point they tried, I don't know. I've actually never thought this before, but I'm thinking it right now. Like, what if they, like, if they ever, like, try to, like, rekindle the relationship or something? Or,
it
like,
wouldn't surprise me, because Holy Ground kind of hints at something a little more recent. Little bit.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It feels like, it almost doesn't feel quite like looking back in a relationship that is years past, as it would have been if, you know, at the time she was writing it, if she was referring to the first time. I honestly almost think that she had, like, come back to it, and they had, like, tried again, and been like, you know what? I kind of just like you as a friend now.
Yeah, or she had just realized, like, oh, you're not my person. Like, you're a nice person, but you're not my person.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know what, that actually makes a lot of fucking sense.
Well, we are the detectives.
Yeah, we are.
Also, another interesting R.M. lyric, she does lyrics from Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell, which again, I mean, you're right, era of Easter eggs. Like, she really is revving up to give us Red. We just need to understand to interpret her signs correctly.
Yeah, exactly. Back then, I wasn't looking for shit like that. And I don't think any of us were, but she was serving it.
God, oh, she was so giving it to us on a silver platter.
Yeah.
So then on September 1st, she does an interview and a Q&A with fan questions at YouTube, which I thought was really cute. I remember being so happy when that came out because it was like a 45-minute interview of her just sitting there and being normal. Like, it wasn't some weird shite, her being like, I love the Kennedys, or her being like, I hate Kanye West. It was just like, he was asking her about tour and music and new music. She said she was writing at the time, and boy, was she writing.
Boy, was she fucking writing.
She also talks in depth about Tea Party and the spontaneity of it all. And I have to laugh. I have to laugh. She doesn't do it like she used to.
No. It's actually, like, thinking about it now, it's actually kind of sad. And I mean, I guess the fact of the matter is that, like, she can't do it like she used to. And I guess that's sad. But it just is sad. It's like, man, back then, you know, like, I probably, like, really would have had a shot. But it's like now.
Yeah, and you could really go to a show. Yeah. You could go to a show and be like, damn, like, I might actually meet Taylor tonight. That's crazy.
But, I mean, now.
It's like, if you don't have a notice of some description, you're not going to be getting backstage. Yeah, I mean, like, it's very, very rare.
They tend to more often than not pick people that they recognize from the internet. Which I just feel like is such a load of bullshit to a certain extent. Like, for the Secret Sessions, that's great. Like, that's perfect. I love it. But, like, for getting into the meet and greet, or getting to, like, whatever the Tea Party or Loft 89 is for that era, I don't think the internet should have anything the fuck to do with it. Like, why?
No, it's the whole point is that they pick people during the show that love her and are into the concert.
Precisely. That's just my opinion.
So on September 13th, Taylor attends the Rodarte. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Rodarte? I don't know what it's called. It's like some fashion brand. So she attends their 2012 fashion show, and she looks interesting in an off-white lace dress, and she sits next to Anna Wintour for like an hour. I wish that I could be a fly on the wall with 2011 Taylor and Anna Wintour having a conversation.
Is that the one where her hair is, like, kind of straight?
Yeah. Like, and, like, side parted a little bit.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I remember that. And she was wearing the...
She was like, I'm grown.
Yeah.
I'm grown, y'all.
Yep. I thought it was...
You better get with it. Yeah. I'm going to start singing about staying over at Jake Gyllenhaal's house.
Yeah,
I'm feeling my stuff.
Buckle up.
Here I go. And then we get the New Yorker profile, which I think is one of the most interesting profiles of her to date, because it reveals a lot of things about her that I think are not presented in a light that she would choose to have been shown in. And interestingly, The New Yorker has been given, I'm pretty sure, no interviews from Taylor since this moment. So I thought that was very interesting. So I'll just read a few excerpts from it. In a world of Lohans and Winehouses, Swift is often cited as a role model, a designation she takes seriously. It's a compliment on your character, she told me. It's based on the decisions that you make in your life. I don't feel completely overcome by the relentless desire to put out a dark and sexy I'm Grown Up Now album. Well, bitch, it happened. Have you heard of Reputation?
Have you heard of Reputation?
Have you heard of it? I just think, again, we talked about this with another profile. I think it was Rolling Stone. She does a little bit play into the high horse, I'm better than you because I don't have breakdowns in public. Exactly. And I don't love that.
A lot of times, especially pre-1989, like I would say pre her feminist awakening, she does have this tendency to totally feed into it. And I don't know if that's because of something that her publicist told her to say. I don't know if it's because she thinks that it's a good thing that people see her that way. Back then, she thought that. I think that if you asked her now if she thought that it was a good thing that she was painted up as America's sweetheart for the longest time, I think she would say that that wasn't a good thing for her ultimately, because it just, it always leads to you crashing and burning, because you make one thing wrong, one misstep, and all of a sudden you're like, canceled. You go from America's sweetheart to, you know, fucking a piece of shit that everyone hates so fast.
And
so fast.
She faces the consequences of that particular fall from grace to this day. People feel very strongly about Taylor Swift. People hate her.
Yeah, and she never even did anything close to the caliber of what some of her peers have had to go through. You know, like, look at Lindsay Lohan. Look at Britney fucking Spears. Look at what Britney Spears had to go through. She went from America's Sweetheart to, I mean, a...
America's Trash Can is how she was presented as.
Trash Can. And, but it's still, Taylor has had to go through similar stuff still, even though she didn't do anything like what Britney did or what Lindsay Lohan did. Not that I'm shitting on what Britney and Lindsay did, because I think that it, the mental, what happens to you when you're that famous and when you're young really fucks you up.
It's so a miracle that didn't happen to Taylor, because she is one of the most famous people in the world, right, like on a different level. I would say Britney was obviously similar, but she's been this famous for this long, so it's surprising she hasn't had a crash.
She has had a crash, but it she didn't seem to take it as poorly as they did, you know what I mean?
She bounced back very quickly. She refocused very quickly.
She did. I don't know. I think that she has a high emotional intelligence, and I don't think it's like hard for me to say this because I love Britney Spears, but I don't think that she had the capability because of how young she was, and
her parents were kind of taking advantage of her. Taylor has good parents. I mean,
yeah,
stable. They didn't need her for a paycheck. Like, they were all right.
Britney never had the support system. I think Taylor is really, really fucking lucky, because it would have been real easy for her to go Lindsay or Britney, because you know.
And what grounds her as well, I think, is that she did have some semblance of a normal childhood. Like, she wasn't a child performer or a child star. I mean, she actively sought it out kind of against her parents' wishes when she was already a teenager.
Right.
So those, like, very formative years of being a child and, like, having a normal upbringing, being born on a Christmas tree farm, like, she had that.
And it's like, she did it, you know? Like, she wanted to be an artist. She wanted to do it. She created her own art. She put it out there. She did it. With Britney and Lindsay, I think there was definitely a total sense of, like, pageant momming. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to
And they were not at the helm of their careers, exactly, for sure.
Exactly. Like, they didn't create anything that they made in the early days. They were just put in the outfit, in hair and makeup, sent out, dance, be slutty, you know what I mean? So
I don't doubt for a second that Taylor had a say in pretty much everything that she has done in her career.
Yep, that's what I think, too. So it's just, like, so different. She's such a unique pop star as compared to those who have come before her. I don't know. She's just very interesting.
Now that's why we have a whole podcast dedicated to her. Like, she's a very complex character.
She is.
And then also, I thought that you might find this funny. Another excerpt from this article. She recalled an incident from seventh grade, a time that she clearly cannot escape. At the beginning of the year, we were all sleeping over at somebody's house, and she broke into a mock whisper. They were all talking about how they wanted to sneak over to this guy's house because this guy had beer. And I was just like, she affected a panicked voice. I want to call my mom. I want to call my mom. My whole life, I've never felt comfortable just being edgy like that.
I mean, a 13.
Do we believe that she never had a sip of beer until she was 21 years old? I don't believe it for a second.
She was sitting there on that couch and she was like, I could never drink beer. And meanwhile, in her head, she's thinking about 2 weeks ago when she was puking in her toilet because her and Caitlin got too fucked up on PBR. Like, literally.
It's true. I mean, it was a little contrived, the shtick of, like, I'm never going to drink, I'm never going to be a bad girl, kind of thing.
I remember I had, like, such this, like, weird kind of opinion about it because, you know, I, at this time, like, I went to Catholic school, like, you know, all these other things about me, I won't get into my personal life, but, like, I was kind of, like, on the fence about, like, being this, like, oh, perfect good girl. It's, like, it appealed to me in some way, but in other ways, I was, like, this just feels like a lie, because I was a teenage girl who, you know, I wore a Catholic schoolgirl's uniform, and I hung out with girls who, you know, would talk about how I'm never going to be drunk, I'm never going to have sex before marriage, and I thought that shit was contrived, and I knew it wasn't true. I was like, you're going to have sex before you get married, Margaret. Shut up. But, like, it's just, like, this, like, weird, like, rotating way of thinking about it. Like, oh, I like so much that she's a good girl. And then it would come back around and be like, but like, I'm not a good girl. Like, I don't, like, I'm her age and I don't, like, I don't, I've had liquor before. I've smoked a cigarette or two. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like this weird, like, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Yeah. Like, I knew it couldn't be true.
Yeah. And it's normal as well. That's what I want to stress to all the listeners, is that, like, it's completely fine for you to rebel a little bit in your adolescence. Yeah. And Taylor definitely did that. But for some reason, she felt that she had to control the narrative, which is something that continues on through her career. So that, I think, was a little bit unnecessary. Like, you can say that you don't want to be edgy, fine. But do we need to go into the stories from seventh grade about how you were so good about not having a sip of beer?
Okay, there's this magazine article. I still have the cover. I want to say it was Cosmo Girl. I think it was. It's the one you would recognize the cover. She's wearing jeans, skinny jeans, like a heart-shaped fucking earrings, and like a black and white striped tank top. Inside the article, there's like one of the quotes that's big and blown up is, she's like, I remember walking into the bathroom at school and hearing girls cry about something they did at a party the other night. I never wanted to be that girl.
Oh my god. I mean, it's unlike you to pit women against other women, Taylor. Maybe if you had a business that you cared about.
Looking back on it, there were so many more moments. I always thought it was kind of light. Like, she was light on the good girl thing. But, like, looking back, it's like, oh, man, she put logs on that fire again and again and again.
Again, she did it to herself. That's the thing, is that, like, yes, the media definitely had a hand in portraying her as this, like, can never be faulted good girl, but also she encouraged it and she fed it. And then in the article, another Easter egg, the writer, this is before Red came out, the writer said that Swift is a songwriting savant with an intuitive gift for verse chorus bridge architecture that calls to mind Swedish pop gods, Dr. Luke and Max Martin.
Weird.
Very interesting, because fucking what did she do? Weird. She went on to work with Max Martin. So strange. And then it, like, profiles her at the Met Gala, and it says that she neared the top of the stairs and froze. She grabbed her publicist's sleeve in a panic, and she said, am I supposed to talk to him or not? Standing by the door was the rapper Kanye West.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, it was right after the kind of redemption she gave him with Innocent. And this makes me feel bad for her, because everybody thinks that she, like, has drama for sport, for fun. I think that genuine conflict actually stresses her out, and she's a people pleaser. She wants people to like her, and this was one person who had made it very clear that as an artist he didn't respect
her. What a moment. That's crazy. It's like, I remember that, but I had forgotten about that for so long. That moment, it's like, I can see that so, like, perfectly in my mind. Wow, that's so fucked. I wonder if they,
her being like, what do I say,
past each other and made eye contact or anything. God, that's so weird to think about.
I think in the article it goes on to say that they had a nice interaction and Taylor was really happy and went off to the party in a good mood.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, so weird. Wow. Okay. That's bizarre.
Isn't that bizarre? I mean, that saga, it's just interesting how long that has spanned. Like, how volatile their relationship has been.
Like, every time I think about it, I'm like, you know, it's really shitty that Kanye has to be such a dick.
And so inextricably linked to Taylor for the rest of her career. Like, no one will ever bring her up without mentioning him again. So then we get into, this is the part of the article I feel like Taylor didn't like, because she was really trying to keep the fact that she was a businesswoman first and foremost, a boss bitch. That was still kind of on the DL in this era, because it didn't go well with the whole, I'm a good girl that just kind of, like, you know, loves to write songs and it's all really authentic. So it's like a scene that the writer paints, and he calls her a figure not unlike teenage monarch, the young Victoria, gracious and vulnerable, but also, given her position of power, a bit terrifying. People bring her things, bottles of water, a styrofoam bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Love that image. So funny. It just says her power and her youth at the same time. And then at one point, Taylor and her mother, Andrea, were backstage talking about video content. And Taylor said, do we have the DVD? The ones that they gave me yesterday, I left at my condo. Andrea gets mad and says, how many ways did we express to Brittany, an assistant, that we needed those DVDs? And Taylor said, it's my fault. I was watching them last night. But then Andrea kind of snaps back and is like, if we had to count on you for everything, like, not everything would get done because you're so busy. So I thought that was interesting, that moment of Andrea being like, you need to boss up, and her being like, no, it's my fault. Like, I'll take the hit for that.
It is interesting. What a weird fucking interaction. Just kind of like a weird, like, peek into the behind the scenes.
That's why I think she didn't like it and never gave them an exclusive again, because she doesn't like to be profiled in a way that isn't controlled by her.
God, I never really thought about it that way. We don't really get instances of her having a conversation with somebody else while somebody else watches anymore. Do you know what I mean?
She very deliberately makes sure that doesn't happen. Like, the Vogue profile for lovers, disappointing. Disappointing.
There's contrived. One that I always think of. I think it was before 1989. I can't remember if it was. I think it was the Rolling Stone
one. Was it the Rolling Stone one?
It was just, like, so... I just don't know how to explain it. It was just, like, this, like, true... I think I romanticized the 1989 era quite a bit, because I think it was, like, the last time that I felt, like, really, like, close to her as an artist. And ever since after 1989, everything that happened that year, she's just, like, sort of been a lot more distant, which you can't blame her for that. I would be distant, too. But it's just, like...
No, but it's sad for us as fans that have been around for a long time and
a profile like the one that we're talking about right now, it would never fucking happen again for a lot of reasons. But the 1989 one, too, it was just like, as compared to the Lover one, like, I enjoyed reading it because we hadn't gotten anything like that in forever. But, yeah, you're right. It, like, was almost, like, sort of, like, listening to, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like,
being a fly on the wall, literally, just like eavesdropping a scene that you're not supposed to see. But there is a Lover profile for Guardian that is much better than the Vogue one. And I think that it was because it was for a UK readership rather than the American one. I think she's way more controlled when it comes to American media, because they are the ones that really sensationalize and fuck her over. So then in that same article, lots of interesting tidbits. She is in Detroit, and the writer says that she seemed somewhat melancholy. Once in a while, I had the feeling that she was on the verge of bursting into tears. She said that she had recently decided that life is about achieving contentment. You're not always going to be ridiculously happy. She had written about 10 songs so far for the next album. Asked to characterize them, she said, they're sad, if I'm being honest. The most recent one, she said, is about moving on. So I'm thinking that she was talking about Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, because she said she wrote that on the tour bus. And that feels like the mood that she's kind of hinting at in this moment. Interesting.
That's a fun thing. But who will know? That probably was Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, which is such a weird song. I mean, I guess Sad, Beautiful, Tragic is about moving on, but, like, it's a really fucking sad moving on song.
Oh, it's sad. And it's also, I can see that song being written on a tour bus. It has that kind of, like, lilting.
Yeah.
Like, it
yeah.
feels like it's never going to end, the song, kind of. Not in a bad way, but it feels
like
it's
going to Red, honestly, stops. Has such a huge collection of sad songs, more than any other album. It's just, like, so fucking sad. But then it has, like, these weird, let's talk about when we get to the actual album. I could go.
I know. There's so much to unpack with Red. So on October 13th, 2011, Wonderstruck launches at Macy's in New York. Taylor does an in-store meet and greet. She has her hair up. She's wearing a striped dress. I would have sold my left arm to go to that meet and greet. I don't know why. That has always been. I love the pictures. I love the videos. There's a video of a little girl being scared and Taylor, like, picks her up and brings her over, and so sweet to her.
I actually know a couple of people that did get to meet her at that event.
I remember people camped out overnight to get spaces for that. It was at and then she did one at Sephora in Nashville. So what was going on?
There's a really iconic Wonderstruck launch dress, and I obsessed over it. It's the one, it's black and it has chandeliers on it. Do you remember that one? I wanted that dress.
Yes. And it's like kind of high neck, short sleeves.
I've been able to own that dress. Like, I was obsessed over it.
The looks she served promoting Wonderstruck were really good. She went on GMA and she had her hair blown out. Yes. She looked really cute. So then after the fragrance isn't out yet, by the way. This is like a launch event. Then she goes and gets inducted into the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. Legend deserved. And she sings a cover of Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning. I can't say I've ever listened to that.
Never heard it. Never heard it. Nope.
I don't think I've ever heard it. Never sought it out. Well, if anyone's heard it, let us know if it's good, if we should waste our time. Because she's very hit and miss with her covers. October 10th, 2011, Joe Jonas attends his third Speak Now tour San Diego. So she's laying the groundwork for that song. And it was entirely inspired by this day and their relationship. The secret message is when you came to the show in San Diego. And her arm lyrics for the night, which I thought were so perfect, were memories fade like looking through a fogged mirror. And that's exactly how I feel about holy ground. That's the vibe this song
gives.
You're
totally right. That's totally true. That's deep. She has on her fucking hands. I don't understand where she finds
I know,
time.
Given how fucking busy she is. So then on October 19th, she goes on Ellen to promote Wonderstruck. This was a flop appearance for me. She gets scared while acting out a commercial with Ellen. I think it's generally unfunny. I don't think Ellen is funny. As we know, I'm tired of the Ellen and Taylor Ellen dynamic. I'm kind of scared of her. I had a childhood fear of her face, so I'm just not super. I just thought she was scary. God. I would cry when she came on TV. So she picks a girl in the audience dressed as a Wonderstruck bottle to win tickets. And that was amazing.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember the fucking outfit.
That was a
really
good moment. The ways that we humiliate ourselves to meet Taylor continues to astound me.
Imagine meeting Taylor and you're dressed up like a perfume bottle. Personally, I don't know if I could live with her.
You couldn't even see her. You couldn't even. They even had the cap on her head and everything. Imagine that being your picture. And it's on television. Then on October 21st, Wonderstruck is officially launched. We get some cute behind-the-scenes content of her creating it. She seemed really involved, which not all the celebrities can say that about their perfumes. We also get an absolute serb of visuals. And the closest thing that we get to a video for Enchanted, that dress, which eventually auctioned for a lot of money. I think that's like 30 G's, but I love those visuals so much. Imagine if we had an Enchanted video that was like that.
Honestly, it's like almost too much for me to think about. It's like overwhelming.
It was so good. And like, I don't know, I think Wonderstruck was such a good name to pick for the perfume. Like, just a great tie-in with the album. She's so smart.
Yeah, and honestly, like, the bottle design with the little charms and like the...
So cute. I love it to this day.
Yeah, it's really
And it smells fucking good.
You know
it really smells good.
They don't sell them anymore because they're fucks.
Yes, I've stocked up. I have like two bottles of it. I'm scared to use it. And the charms keep falling off.
I have like a backlog. So like I have the original bottle that I got when it first came out, which I still have because I bought the big one. And there's not a lot, maybe like a quarter left of it. So I don't really use it anymore just because. And then I also, my parents bought me like one of those gift sets, which came with like a smaller size and then a tiny little baby one. Yeah. And the lotion.
Ooh, and the lotion.
Baby one that you like, it has like, you take off the top and it has like a little stick. So you can just like put a little bit on your wrist. So I have one of those too.
The top notes are raspberry, freesia, and blackberry with middle notes of honeysuckle, hibiscus, and vanilla. And base notes of peach, amber, sandalwood, and musk. If you haven't smelled this, I don't know how you're going to because it's been discontinued. It's kind of spicy, but also super sweet and musky. I really like it.
It's the best one. Wonderstruck Enchanted is a piece of hot garbage.
So October 31st, 2011, Taylor finally zooms back down to Earth and adopts the hateful and humble Meredith Swift. A Scottish vole, she said, shop, don't adopt. And she uploads that video of Meredith meowing back at her when Meredith actually liked to give Taylor the time of day. I love Meredith. I stan Meredith. She's my favorite cat of Taylor's. I think that she treats her mean and keeps her humble.
Yep, that's what she deserves. It's what she needs.
She has the most attitude. She's the queen. She rightfully sits on her throne. I love Meredith. I love that story of her attacking someone at a secret session. And then she was banned from attending secret sessions ever since. Someone wandered into a bedroom. I don't know how they let her do this, but the fans were wandering around the house. They don't let you do that anymore. They went into Taylor's or like someone's bedroom and Meredith was on the bed and they went to go pet her and she like savaged someone's hand. I mean, they deserve it.
They fucking deserve it.
You walked into her space.
Yeah, if I saw Meredith, I'd be like, from a distance, I'd go, hey, Meredith. And then
I would bow gracefully. And not go anywhere near her. And then November 9th, 2011, she performs Ours at the CMA Awards and wins Entertainer of the Year. I fucking love that performance. She's sitting on like a living room couch with these... cute antiques. It's when she's going through her antique phase and she just sits there with her fucking guitar and sings her cute love song and it is so good.
It's very cute. It's iconic.
The vocals are good for once in her life. Sometimes, you know, when she sits down with a guitar on an award show, it is hit and miss.
Yep, it's true. I remember White Horse on the fucking that was so bad. That was
or I mean terrible. Any of the Fearless era performances on live TV were just not it. Awful. It just wasn't it. Jesus. But this one was cute. She seemed calm and she got a standing ovation. So I was very happy for her. And that song deserves.
It deserves. It deserves.
And it was about John Mayer, which is very funny to me in hindsight, because she sings it very sweetly and clearly fucking hates him.
Yeah.
And on the 20th of November, she was fucking busy this month. She attends the AMAs and she wins Album of the Year or Artist of the Year, I'm not sure, and Country Female. She wears a pretty gold dress. This was like an iconic Taylor look. I feel like I saw this on Tumblr all the time. She wears that gold dress with her hair straightened in a low side pony. Nicki Minaj presents her with the award and she hangs out with Katy Perry.
Yes.
And Katy Perry has that weird ass pink hair, you know, that big ass pink hair that she has.
Well, I mean, you could be referring to any number of things, but yes, I know in particular.
It was during the one that got away, that kind of era.
Yep. Was that Teenage Dream that she was doing that?
Yep. It was like the tail end of Teenage Dream.
Yeah, okay.
And then on November 21st, the Speak Now World Tour CD DVD is released. I think we've talked about this, but the DVD is amazing. It's so well shot. And we get all of those covers. Someone reminded me that her Nashville cover is from the deluxe edition of that. And then on November 22nd, 2011, interestingly, she releases Ours as the final single from Speak Now. It receives critical acclaim. Like, it gets really good reception from critics.
Well, good.
However,
the video is a hot piece of shit. Is that what you're going
to
say?
The video. No. We're getting to that. What I was going to say is that Aaron Thompson from Seattle Weekly says, if this was a movie, it's better than Ours.
Well, that's because he knows what taste is. He knows how the ear works. He understands what sound is.
He has heard this song and knows that it is superior to almost anything Taylor has ever put out.
Yep. Very true. You know, I was actually
thinking, and also our fight is being fought. It's being won. If this was a movie, it's coming up in people's mouths.
It is because of our good work, because of the things that we are doing.
I just want to say there are a lot of conversations that have been going on that I think have kind of originated from the evolution of Snake.
I mean,
I'm just saying, no one was calling If This Was a Movie one of her best songs until we put out that episode.
Not until we said it.
And I won't rest until I get the lyrics from The Bridge, which means I'm never going to rest.
Speaking of, do you think if she's actually going to re-record her albums, do you think that she's going to do If This Was a Movie?
Absolutely not. I wish that she would, but she seems to be stubbornly ignoring it.
She's just such a fucking asshole sometimes.
Like, I know, she's such a bitch. And it's so good. I don't get why she doesn't know this song. She doesn't know it.
I almost don't even want her to, because it's like I think about it and be like, I'm gonna reimagine it. It's like, no, you're fucking not.
No, you won't.
And you're gonna re-record exactly as it was.
Note for note, but you're gonna use your new mouth and use your words and you're gonna say what you mean in The Bridge. Yeah, so everybody keep fighting this fight. Let's get it as a B stage song. Yeah. I don't think I'll be able to handle it if she does it.
That's gonna be I will lose
like
my goddamn mind.
Two full circle of a moment for us. We need to have some unresolved things.
Yeah.
And on November 27th, a few days later, she gets coffee with Will Anderson in Nashville. He is from the band Parachute. And allegedly, this is what Begin Again is about. This date that she went on, cool, casual coffee date. I didn't realize that there were more people there than just them. There were, like, other friends there. I'm pretty sure Caitlin was there.
Oh, yeah, I remember this little fucking weirdo. I thought it was such bullshit. I literally remember reading about Begin Again being about this fucking, like, nobody and being like, really, this dude? And it's like so funny because it was such a throwaway thing to her. I think the song is honestly about starting to date as opposed
to it's not really about a person. No. If you listen to the lyrics, it's triggered by this person, but it's really more about how she's adjusting her attitude back to being hopeful about love.
Speaking of, you know the song that Parachute wrote about Taylor, right?
No, I don't.
Oh my god, really?
What is it called?
It's actually kind of a slap.
Of course it is.
It's called White Dress, and it's actually really fucking good. I I mean, I cannot.
Well, it has to be better than Paper Doll by John Mayer.
Oh my God. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. John Mayer could never do what Parachute did, which he honestly is like embarrassing. But like the song is actually cute. The bridge is really good. That's what I'll say.
What are the lyrics like? Is it complimentary?
It is. It's super complimentary. It's so interesting. Also,
but not Adam Young creepy.
No, no, not at all. Not at all. It's good. It's just about, I don't know how to explain it. It's just like weird to hear somebody describe Taylor in a song and not vice versa. And it actually be good. Like, you know what I mean? People, nobody is at that level that, you know, like to describe her in a good way. But for one moment in time, this random white boy was good enough to describe Taylor in a song.
I know, and he got her attention, too. I feel like this year she was kind of really trying it out. I think she was way more heartbroken than any of us really put together at the time, and she was just trying to find a way to move on.
Yeah, yeah.
And she wears heels now. So we come to the end of the year, and this is when everything changes, not to, like, randomly include Red here, but you know, everything has changed. On December 1st, 2011, the world shifts on its axis. Ruth Bader Ginsburg shakes in her boots again because Taylor Swift tweets, "Got a haircut."
Yeah.
Oh my God, I lost my mind when I saw this picture, and it's just a casual picture of her at dinner with her friends with fucking bangs and blown out hair. She said, "Goodbye, Pippi Longstocking. I'm gonna be a pop star.
I'm that bitch now." I don't know if you heard, but yeah.
If you don't know, you can ask.
Yep.
Because she is. She got a haircut, and wow, what a moment. Her hair is such a thing, you know, like her long, curly, big, fluffy hair. That was really her thing. That was like everybody identified her when people would like draw portraits. Her silhouette had like the big curls. Like, this was a moment when she changed her hair and like committed to something. She hadn't done a new hairstyle since she debuted. So it was kind of crazy. I mean, I lost it. But she said it was a random choice. Don't believe that for a second.
Nope.
And she did it for a photo shoot. And I believe that it ended up being the Vogue photo shoot in February of the next year that I loved.
Yes, yes, yes. And I remember, actually, I was a kind of a purist back in the day.
Oh, yes, you were.
I did not like that hair at fucking all. I hated it. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? What is this fucking joke?
I was like, who is this?
I hated it. I don't think I started to like it ever. I don't think I ever was like, okay, it's serving. Like, I never ever thought. Definitely in hindsight, like the change of hair was like, it's kind of a serve. Back then,
The world shifted on its axis, as I said.
Yeah, exactly. But like looking back, it's like that was such like. It was
a big deal.
It was an Easter egg. It was like, Red is coming. That's what she said when she changed her hair.
That's what she said to us.
Yep.
And then, so the day after she did that, the R's music video comes out. And I forgot that she has the new hair in the music video. It's just put up, like it's in a bun.
Yeah, that fucking.
And that music video was so weird. It was so weird.
It's just garbage. Like, it's.
The only thing we got good from that was that gif of her going, "Love you," like with her hand heart. I don't get it. She had an obsession with soldiers coming home. I don't know why. And it continues. Like, for this love on the 1989 tour, on the 1989 Super Session, that was weird. She's strange.
It's just like bizarre. I mean,
it was so random. It's not really what the song is about. The song is about like other people not approving. It's not about your husband being away for war.
It's a super Southern thing to give a shit about, is soldiers coming home for more. Not that, I mean, I guess I shouldn't. I feel like, I mean, I get a lot of flack for saying this. Not that everyone everywhere else doesn't give a shit. It's just like, the South really gives a shit.
They really care about this stuff. It's a big deal. Troops.
Like, they are coming home. Like, you know those videos of, like, the compilation videos? I watch them, and I cry.
I've seen them. Yeah. You know, 100%. I mean, they're meaningful and, like, good for them. Good job, you guys, I guess. But does Taylor Swift need to include it in a music video for ours of all the songs? I just don't think so.
It's like, and why is she so desperate to be included in some kind of like country music
narrative? I know. What's wrong with her? This was like, how can I insert myself into American iconography here? She's like, the Kennedys, soldiers.
Which maybe is she's funny now. Us
that Swifties are braver than the Marines.
But this is the thing, you think about her being obsessed with soldiers coming home. And then she sits there and she says, okay, Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince talking about how American patriotism is fucking weird. Well, it's like, girl, you put out a video.
You loved it. You had 4th of July parties for years. You cooked your hot dogs and you lit your sparklers and you danced around and took a million photos. Don't try and tell us that you don't love being an American. So the R's music video gets released. We're kind of meh about that one. It felt like it dragged on forever. The office stuff wasn't funny. It just, the looks were bad. Like it just wasn't a good music video. No. And it's in horrible quality as well.
That's another thing that pisses me off.
I know. And Taylor, in what world am I supposed to believe that you know what it feels like to work in a boring office job and get ignored all the time? You don't. No,
don't
it's never happen to you. So then she attends Billboard Women in Music Award and she debuts the New Banks and she wears a red dress and we're so fucking dumb. We're all dumb. We're so dumb.
Dude, it's like the fucking red shoes picture in the studio.
She ushers in a new era suddenly and she accepts Woman of the Year. That's the first time she won Woman of the Year at the Billboard Women in Music because she's a powerful female legend.
Yep, exactly.
And then on December 13th, she tweets, I'm so 22 right now. And that is how she stayed. She has been 22 ever since that day.
She just can't shake it.
She'll be 81 and feeling 22.
Yep, that's her life now.
That's her life. And you know what? All the Swifties that are turning 22 recently... You're welcome.
Yep, you're fucking welcome.
You have the content for it. So she had a small birthday party in Nashville, and I looked at an article, and it said that it was star-studded. You know who these stars were?
Tell me.
Hot Shell Ray, Parachute, and Hayley Williams.
Fuck!
No, I'm no hater, but I'm not thinking that this was... Compared to other stuff she's done, a star-studded event.
Why the
agency,
fuck?
Hot Shell Ray, and Parachute, please.
This was during this period of time when she would befriend these random white men like Hot Shell Ray.
Don't give a fuck. The Glee cast members. Why? Taylor, no one gives a shite. Stop it.
Star-studded.
And what we really get, this one really shook me hard. Because Madeline and I, at this stage, were both very obsessed with the Hunger Games. We were very obsessed. I had turned, do you remember on Tumblr when you had to, like, announce when you were going to include a different kind of content on your blog?
Yep. I remember that vividly.
So I was like, hey, guys, I just want to let you all know that I'm going to be Hunger Games and Taylor Swift blog. I hope that that's okay with you. And I lost like 500 followers because I started posting about the Hunger Games. And I would, like, think about how to intersperse these two different things into one blog. People got very mad.
But you know what? At this point, when Safe and Sound came out, if you weren't standing in the Hunger Games and Taylor Swift, you were a fake fan. You were a fake Swiftie.
Yeah, you were. So, and you were missing out on some excellent content.
Content, ladies, content. And Safe and Sound.
And we did.
By the way, hands down, best song she's ever done for a movie. Hands down. Hands down.
Oh, 1,000,000%. Yeah. And also, I remember it coming really by surprise. Like, I think she announced it one day, and the next day the song was out. And I remember hearing it and being like, whoa, because it was so different to anything she had done. It was so mature. It was spooky. Perfect song for you, because it's like a very Halloween-ish song.
It's spooky.
It's her spookiest song for sure, other than Haunted, but it's spooky in a different way. The Civil Wars and Taylor Swift writing together is a writing collaboration that I wish... we could do again because I just thought they came up the harmonies. And this was her first time that she really served us vocals as well, because there was restraint, there was control, it was soft, it was breathy. Oh, it was so good. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It was just such a blip. And also, this got us really hyped for the next album, because we all thought this was the direction she was going in, and boy, were we.
Yeah, I mean, it's like kind of indie-ish, I guess you could argue. It's just like, it's just like Red is kind of like that, but not really. It's like she does acoustic a couple of times on Red, but for the most part,
it stands alone.
Safe and Sound is it was a pop culture
it's
moment.
It's artistic, truly.
It was a fucking religious moment. It was a moment of national security. Like people,
it was a national security threat. Actually, we were on lockdown for a while after that.
And I mean, she fucking snapped when she sat there and wrote that song. With the Civil Wars, they were there too. But
And I remember that year I had gotten into Poison and Wine as well. So when I heard that they were collaborating with Taylor and it was for the Hunger Games, I was like, oh my God.
Taylor made for me.
And it was co-written by a member of Bob Dylan's band, which I thought was super interesting because it does have that like indie singer-songwriter vibe to it. And it was just so different and so grown up as well. It was really like a mature, because it wasn't about a relationship. It really was, I love when Taylor takes like a fictional thing and makes that a song, like Miss Americana, your new stand song. That is completely like a story that she made up. Mine, you could argue as well, is a song that's kind of based off of something like
Well, same thing with Death by a Thousand Cuts.
This is where she became a critical darling and people stopped looking at her as just a teenage artist. They were like, wow, like, I mean, the proof was there already, but she just served them some more food to eat. And they said, yes, please, thank you. It peaked at number 30 on the Hot 100, which I understand it's not a radio song. But I remember the shit was in different areas. Different people were kind of getting into this song.
It sort of had this kind of like way about it where it's like, okay, if you like Taylor Swift, obviously you're going to like Safe and Sound. But also if you didn't like Taylor Swift,
you wouldn't know it was her if you heard it. You wouldn't know.
It took a lot of people by surprise, especially because like it was linked to the Hunger Games. So like a different fandom was served this and they had to listen to it because it was something that was related to the movie that they were excited about. And like a lot of people, I remember that too. Like a lot of people being like, wow, this is Taylor Swift. Wow, this is actually good. And then there was, you know, the small sect of people that were like, get this stupid blonde bitch away from my movie. But
well, you know what? And also, you know what I liked is that a lot of people at first assumed that it was a Pete-ness song, but it's really Rue and Katniss. That's really what it's about to me, at least.
I think it's about,
it's a Prim and Katniss.
I think the certain verses are about different people. I think that he gets a verse, but I think that Rue also gets a verse in that song. Gail is not included. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes, we also got this the day after Christmas, which was iconic because, you know, I love a gift.
I love a present. Thank you so much, Taylor. A late present.
Thank you, Taylor. You are a queen. We love you. And the critics loved this. They did. They ate it all up. And they still cite it to this day in articles that they write reviewing her current stuff. But I think it was interesting because it was such a pivot and she always tricks us before an album comes out. Like she always releases something to get our gears going and then switches lanes. And that's exactly what she did with Safe and Sound. All right. So, I mean, that's how we end this year.
Oh, really? We end it with
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
December 26th. It was a great way to end.
Yeah.
And the last month was like very accelerated growth and evolution for her.
Yeah.
So I think she was just ready. She was listening to her Joni Mitchell songs. I would guess that the album was actually not almost done because she still hadn't written 22. I would say that the bulk of it was done though, because for me, I think the pop stuff was a late addition.
I think that too, because if you take the pop stuff off of Red, it's
a very cohesive album.
It's very cohesive. And then she peppers it in. Like she's putting salt on like flavors. Seasoning.
She's seasoning it for us.
Yes.
So if you had to wrap up this year, Madeline, what are your thoughts on 2011?
So, 2011, it's a very interesting gap year between albums because she did so much shit. She was everywhere all the fucking time. We were getting fed.
And reuniting with her exes all the time. A perfume, a new song, a new haircut. Jeez, we were getting fed.
She was totally ready to, like, make this transition between her first three albums, which, honestly, now that I'm looking back on all of her records, and, you know, I have all seven of them now, those first three albums are their own category. And I think that
really, they're different Taylor Swift.
Yeah, Red started a new category. Honestly, I think it goes Red through 1989. And then I think that Reputation and Lover are also in their own kind of category.
Mm-hmm.
With probably the next album that we get, I think it'll fit in there. But I sometimes I've started to think that it might.
I think she's going
to
take a break.
Yeah, I think that too, because I think so.
It's over time for her to take a break.
She's going to get married to Joe, I'm pretty sure. And I don't.
Well, it's interesting that we don't have tour. That's really interesting. She's never announced an album and not immediately announced
tour. And I'd really like to have the tour information because I need to know.
I want to plan, yeah. So if I had to sum up this year, I would say a huge moment of evolution. You know, that's what we're all about here on The Evolution of the Snake.
Yep, evolution.
I am scared to get into 2012 because planning for the podcast is now going to get absolutely fucking insane, because when Taylor decided to be a pop star, she said she was going to be everywhere and do absolutely everything, and then all the drama kicked off.
It's going
to
be insane. So like 2012 through 2016, every single podcast is going to be a fucking nightmare.
2012 part one is going to be okay because the album doesn't come out until the end of the year. So I reckon the next episode will be January through to the live chat, and then after the live chat, that will be the second episode, because there will just be so much to talk about.
I mean
it's gonna be intense, but I'm very excited to talk about Red. That's my favorite Taylor Swift album, so I will be beating shit out of Madeline on podcast, telling her to shut the fuck up.
Oh, it's gonna be fun.
Oh, we also have to thank everyone for 10,000 listens.
Oh yeah, that's right, we made it, and we didn't even have to try.
It was crazy. I mean, we're very grateful to have an engaged audience, and we're sorry that we can't deliver to you more regularly, but you know, this is just the way it's gotta be.
It's just, you know, two 20-somethings, you know, working, making money, living, and on the side,
talking shit about Taylor Swift.
We stan Taylor Swift.
Also, we want a chart. We're like our mother, we care about the charts. Yep. The highest we've ever charted is like 24, I want to say. We want to break the top 20.
Yep.
So, Swifties, stream it, download it. I mean, we always will be.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of not being him.
Yep.
So everyone, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Music, and as always, let us know your thoughts over on our Twitter. Madeline has been checking it more. So come and harass us. And also, thank you to the girl. There's this girl that tweets us whenever we release a new episode, and she compiles all the looks that we talk about.
Oh, does she? I was not aware of that. Yes. That's actually really cool.
I can't remember her name right now, but you are a queen, whoever you are, and she said she was going to do it for this upcoming episode. Cool. Thank you. This is already too much work for us. All right, that about wraps up this episode. So yeah, subscribe, follow us, go check out our Twitter at @TSwiftPodcast to stay updated. We do feed you guys a little bit in between episodes, and I'm going to say, I don't want to be overly ambitious here, but we'll try and have 2012 part one up in the next month or so.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you again in the next episode.